KTRS.
Hey, good morning this morning. The McGraw Show, Big 550 KTRS, just like the woman said. Monday means you need to check in with Dick Weiss, our media critic. He is a longtime editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And is now owns his own website, weissrite.com, weisswrite. He's also involved with stlbeacon.org, which is a great organization and publication on the online, stlbeacon.org. If you're not checking it out as your daily stops, shame on you, stlbeacon.org. Dick, good to have you on again.
It's great to be here.
Yes, it is good to be here. Are you the father of the love child? Riley
no.
Hunter's love child.
No.
All right, so
no.
It's not you, not, and it's not John Edwards.
And I'm not running for office.
And you're not running for office. What do you make of him denying this story, the local media, or the traditional media, really not reporting it at all, and then him coming out Friday, admitting it?
It's just so depressing. The world is topsy-turvy when the National Enquirer is the intrepid journalistic resource.
Right.
John Edwards, a man who seemed to be so concerned about poverty in America and two Americas and
yes.
so on, is not who he says he is. The New York Times never really covered the story until they absolutely had to.
Right.
And the world is upside down for me. I can hardly go on.
I actually find it somewhat disingenuous for the traditional media to say, well, we had it, we just didn't go with it because we had to verify it. We just can't go off half-cocked. You know, they didn't even pick up the fact that the National Enquirer said that they had the story, right? Whereas if there's a more traditional newspaper would have had the story, they would have said, you know, according to this tradition, nothing.
Yeah, well, there seemed to be this is a little bit on a continuum. There was the New York Times, who basically said, we're not going to go with this unless and until we can verify it on our own. But then really acknowledged that they didn't go after it. They didn't really look very hard because
right.
it wasn't a story that they were very interested in.
Right.
And then there were other media, the Charlotte Observer, for instance, which because John Edwards is a senator in their state, they began to look into it and they began to develop some information and they started writing about it, not as rumor, but in terms of the facts that they were able to dig up. And one of those was the fact that the birth certificate for the so-called love child had no father named.
Right.
So that certainly raised some questions. And questions also began to be raised about, even though Edwards was no longer running for office, he could be a big speaker at the convention. He could be offered a cabinet post
right.
down the line. So it was worth writing about. And then there was the National Enquirer who looked into this a lot, but also was paying for information, which is ethically a no-no in journalism circles. And they came up with some information, but the information came out, you know, they said they had pictures, but then they didn't publish the pictures for over a week. So it began to raise questions about what they really had.
Right.
And so it was difficult to, you know, if you were an editor at a newspaper or for a website to go just to know what to go with. But it became, in a way, McGraw, I think maybe we did it right in the sense that it became so prevalent in the blogosphere
right.
that everybody knew about it. It was being joked about on Jay Leno, but not on, you know, it
right.
wasn't on NBC News.
Right.
And so you couldn't ignore it anymore. And we began talking about it, 3 weeks ago?
Sure, sure.
And, you know, what we knew and what we didn't know and how authoritative it might be. And so there you have it. It was everybody handled it a little bit differently, and
I don't think
some look worse than others.
I don't think this is going away because
no.
Now this supposedly he was asked, "Did you pay her hush money?" No, I didn't pay her anything of the kind. These tabloid journalists, these tabloid newspapers who always lie, say that that's not true. But now we hear that there's a friend and a campaign contributor who has given her money. Now, unbeknownst supposedly to John Edwards,
right.
but he's given her a whole bunch of money. Why was that money given to her? What about this guy who claims he is the father of the child? And I just find it And then the DNA tests. Right. He's out there screaming, yelling, I'll be happy to give a DNA test. And she's saying, oh, absolutely not.
And it does make you wonder. You can no longer give John Edwards the benefit of the doubt.
No.
I think.
No.
And so it does make you wonder, well, whether John Edwards in that hotel meeting arranged this in a way. He said, look, I'm going to go out and say, I'll be tested, but I want you to say, no
right.
way.
That's right. For the $3 million my friend's going to give you, you've never heard of me.
Right. That just makes you suspicious.
Right.
We have no evidence to know that.
Right.
But it raises lots of questions and deserves further investigation. And apparently, from what, you know, reading his public statements, he's not going to go away. Now, there's one thing that I think that I haven't heard mentioned that maybe is a little sensitive topic, and that's Elizabeth Edwards. And a lot of people, most people, I think, feel a great deal of sympathy for her and empathy. And but I want to say that in a way that she was complicit in this, and that is that she knew in 2006, mm-hmm. her husband admitted to her that he had an affair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what that has to do with their marriage and so on, that's between them. But she did not apparently discourage him from running for president,
mm-hmm.
perhaps knowing that at some point he would have to lie
mm-hmm.
about what was going on.
I just
raised that.
You're absolutely
and,
right.
And, you know, she's a terrific person. And I was talking with my wife about it. I said, why do you think that happened? Why would she? And Sally said that she thought maybe that Elizabeth Edwards had her, in a way, her own agenda, that she was very concerned about health care mm-hmm. and some very progressive issues. And she wanted her chance to voice those things and be out in front of the American public and say, okay, go for it.
It was done,
let's go for it.
It was done to her and with her,
yeah.
really, in a sense. That's a good point. Now, making a local transition, the Scott Musciani story here locally,
mm-hmm.
that was to have been rumored about for months, everybody knew. And it only mm-hmm. broke once the police filed a police report and arrested him. Should that story have been out beforehand?
Oh, it's a good question. You know, I don't know what reporters at the Post-Dispatch knew or other media,
right.
for that matter,
right.
and what they were able to verify. But typically, when there are allegations about somebody, if you don't have the information yourself, you haven't been able to dig it up, then you wait for charges to be filed. Now, the question is, well, if this was out, you know, rumored as you say, and known, should it have been investigated aggressively? And we don't know how aggressively any of the news media did investigate it or whether they were aware. If you were aware,
sure.
I imagine lots of people were aware.
Well, but, are you saying I'm not in the know? That's exactly what you're saying.
Actually, it seems like you're more in the know than some.
Let me ask you this question, though. Are lawyers and the lawyers for media outlets much more worried about getting sued and so will hold off on stories more than they were years ago?
Oh, yeah. I think in general, it's become a much more litigious society, and the press freedoms have been a little bit more circumscribed than they have been, certainly not to the extent that they are in some other countries. But I think this primarily goes to reputation. You don't want to be wrong.
Right.
On something like this, and so you want to cross every T and dot every I. You know, go back to the New York Times, where the New York Times really, in a sense, disgraced itself, although who knows, maybe more information will come out, was on the John McCain story, where they did go after that hammer and tong,
right?
In terms of his relationship with another woman, and had used unidentified sources and didn't really have it nailed down. And
missed it and got it wrong.
Supposedly, yeah. I mean,
we don't know.
John McCain's denied it,
right?
And he, unlike John Edwards, now deserves the benefit of the doubt until innocent until proven otherwise.
Right.
So,
what do you make of the fact that John Edwards sits down with Nightline, and it's going to appear at 10:30 on a Friday night, and then scoops himself and calls Bob Schieffer at CBS, and CBS breaks the story at the 5:30 newscast? While ABC had a deal to run it at 10:30.
Yeah, too bad for ABC, I guess. But I was reading a piece in the Times. Now they're talking about, and they have Take No Prisoners writer, Alessandra Stanley, I think her name is. And she was saying that this is not the end of narcissism in John Edwards' case. He
right.
still thinks that he's a public figure and that he can control what it is that's said or thought about him. And he probably, according to Stanley, simply should have issued a very terse statement admitting things, and now everybody's parsing his statements and questioning it, and it's going to go on and on. It's not over.
We live in a world where we believe the National Enquirer more than we believe John Edwards.
You know, I hate to say that. It's very depressing.
Yeah.
It makes people – the other thing that came up on this that I thought was really true was something that David Broder said on Meet the Press and I think elsewhere as well, that it just makes people very cynical about politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that somebody as articulate and well-spoken and seemingly well-intentioned as John Edwards can be saying one thing and doing another, and that anybody who comes along with terrific communication skills maybe cannot be believed.
Look at the last couple of months. We got John Edwards. We've got Scott Musciani closer to home. We got Larry Craig. We got Elliot Spitzer. You know, both sides of the aisle, up and down the ranks,
right.
They're all dirty.
Right. And is it something in our culture, in our politics, that seems to draw people like that, like moths to a flame?
Right.
And is it that when you get all that attention, it changes you, or simply bad people attracted to politics?
You found something that Buzz Bissinger wrote?
Yes, Buzz Bissinger, the sports writer that's probably more familiar to St. Louisans than perhaps many others because of his association with Tony La Russa. He wrote, what was it, Three Nights in August.
Yeah.
Maybe it just seemed twice as long to me. And Friday Night Lights, he's the Friday Night Lights man.
That
is correct. He is doing some guest columns for the New York Times, and he wrote a piece on the Olympics, which are not a favorite event for him. And my metaphor for this is if you had a bowl of oatmeal and suddenly a sort of a little cockroach began to surface in that oatmeal, you probably would not want to eat oatmeal again for a long time.
That's probably right.
And Buzz Bissinger has served up a bowl of Olympic oatmeal because you'll read this piece by it's called Creepshow. And there isn't anything really new in this about what's wrong with the Olympics. It's just that it's all put together in a certain way that makes watching the Olympics so unappetizing that you wouldn't want to turn the television on. And I have to tell you that when did the Olympics start? Was it Sunday?
Friday night.
I have not watched a minute of coverage.
Really?
Since I've read Buzz Bissinger's piece.
Shame on you.
And I've read some stuff in the paper a little bit.
Right.
But Buzz just talks about basically, you know, first of all, you've got, you know, the Chinese and the pollution there and how I think there's something like 750,000 people die each year in China simply because of the pollution that's there. And, of course, to get rid of that pollution, they basically made it even more difficult for the Chinese people. So he starts there, and then he goes on to, you know, how no race, you can really take it face value because who knows later how many people will be drugged and so on. And then he gets to the gymnastics, in which they take, you know, 7-year-old girls, steal their childhood. they don't get to menstruate till they're 20 years old.
Right.
And they have broken bones and so on. And he says, simply, I don't enjoy watching child abuse on television. And that's the way he puts it. And I lost my appetite for the Olympics.
You know what? It's actually worth writing about. That's a interesting and a legitimate conversation. Since you haven't seen any of the opening ceremonies or anything.
Were you moved?
I was moved. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I think they spent $40 billion on this Olympics. Now, this is for a country where you've got very rich and powerful people, but you also have people living on, you know,
right.
2 cents a day.
Yes.
They spent $40 billion on the Olympics. But in terms of what's real and what isn't real, There is a story circulating now that has yet to hit the big time here. But the you missed it because you didn't see it, but there were giant footprints. There were 29 footprints.
I did see a blip on CNN or something where people were walking through some paint. No.
These were giant fireworks shaped like footprints, and they walked through Beijing in giant steps. And NBC showed an aerial view of these fireworks going off above it. Uh-huh. As these 29 steps representing the 29th Summer Games to walk into the stadium, which then explodes into whatever. Uh-huh. Turns out all of that was computer generated.
Oh.
Yeah. So, all fake.
Well, there you go.
So there you go. What's the best story we've never read?
Well, Buzz Bissinger's piece, okay. but let me go on and tell you what's in the Beacon today. It's called Any Doctors in the House. And do you have a primary care physician?
No, I do not.
Well, and you're in good health, but at some point you're going to maybe want to try to find one.
Right, right.
Good luck, buddy, because there are very few that have openings anymore that you can get in to see a doctor. And this piece starts, it's by Kathy Sutton and Cindy Haynes, who's on this station another time. And they talk about the shortage that's out there. And it starts with a woman by the name of Mary Raskin, who went through a series of doctors, didn't have enough, and couldn't find one that would actually see her. And she had one of her best friends died, and that was the only way that she got in to see that guy's her doctor.
She took the spot.
The doctor had an opening. That was how she got in.
Wow. And this is STL Beacon. This is STLBeacon.org.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Dick. We'll check in with you next week.
Okay.